couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Belfast, Clifford the Big Red Dog, Red Notice, Passing, and Olaf Presents. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the Trailer Park, and the Home Cinema Roundup, featuring a look at some audiobook selections. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The first piece of news is a sad piece of news, and that is we lost Dean Stockwell this week. He died of natural causes last Sunday at the age of 85. And he had such a long career in Hollywood. He meant different things to different people because of what they know him from. I mean, he goes all the way back to the MGM musicals and the classic films. He was an MGM contract player. A lot of people know him for his work with David Lynch. I mean, of course, he was in Blue Velvet in a very disturbing role. And he was in the original Dune. He played Dr. Yui. He was my Dr. Yui growing up. And the thing that's highest profile, he played the character of Al from Quantum Leap. I also watched him recently in The Dunwich Horror, which is based on the stories of H.P. Lovecraft. This was made like 1970, 1971. It feels like one of those Amicus, or I think it might have been an Amicus movie, but it also has that Hammer feel to it, old British horror. But even though it takes place in America, had Sandra Dee trying to boost her career after, getting a little bit older. I mean, she still looked good, but you know, she kind of played the object of affection from Cthulhu, who wanted to use her to repopulate the world with the old gods. You know how that stuff goes. You know, the same song and dance you see in every movie from Snow White to Annie the Musical. But anyways, yeah, Dean Stockwell, sad to see him go, age 85. Fantastic actor with a career you can spend an entire year watching his work and not finish at all. So he will be missed. The next piece of news I want to talk about is the box office. It's interesting because Eternals made $71 million last weekend, and it's so strange because depending on who you talk to, that's either good or bad or great or terrible. Everybody had a different take on this. Here's my take. I think $71 million for a movie like Eternals is amazing, especially for early November. I mean, yeah, it's not uncommon for a big early Christmas movie to be coming out at the beginning of November. I mean, it's a little bit early before for the holiday season. But they oftentimes put in the catbird seat that first weekend of November. But there was a lot running against Eternals, not just the fact that it had a low Rotten Tomatoes score, but also the fact that it was a little bit harder to digest. It was, like I said, 10 characters when I talked about it last week, and these 10 characters and a lot of them, nobody knew who any of them were. And, the actors, although some of them were very recognizable, there was no huge draws. And the fact that this movie eked out $71 million is pretty impressive, especially considering the last movie that Chloe Zhao did was Nomadland, which I don't even think made $71 million in the theaters at all. So this was a success in my book, and I think it's a nice stepping stone. Now, if Marvel releases a string of movies that are very similar to this, you might weed out your audience. But I have faith that Marvel's going to keep juggling these things and make them more diverse. I don't want every single movie to be exactly the same. And I think that was what made Eternals so interesting, is that it was different. Now, another big movie is Dune, which dropped about 50%, which isn't bad. Again, it dropped heavily the first weekend off. But this last weekend, 50% ain't bad for like its third or fourth weekend. And it should leg it comfortably to over $100 million domestically during its run, which is actually quite good. It's along par with the Godzilla movie that came out earlier this year as an HBO Max hybrid movie. And of course, there's revenue coming in from HBO Max, doing very well overseas. No Time to Die eased a bit last weekend, but kept its numbers higher, but it's hitting PVOD this week, which is going to cause it to dwindle significantly in the box office now, because, the immediacy has dropped out and now you can watch it at home. That's almost 3-hour movie. And finally, I think it's going to get over $150 million, no problem. The big thing I think a lot of people are looking at is it going to gross more than Casino Royale and Quantum of Solace did, which was the upper 160s, and that was 15 years ago. So pandemic or no, this is not a huge, massive hit in the U.S., but of course the overseas box office is going to buoy it up. Other interesting things to note is both Ron's Gone Wrong, which lost screens but only like had like 4% drop, and The French Dispatch, which gained screens and had like less than a 1% drop, those were actually really great holds for two very different movies. And then finally, Halloween Kills completely deflated, but that's what you'd expect for a Halloween movie now that Halloween is over. We've got a barrage of Christmas movies coming. Insert sad trombone sound here. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is actually the one I'm less interested in. It comes out later, but I want to talk about it first. And that is Sing 2, which is in theaters on December 22nd.
Dream big dreams. We just got to be brave now.
Wrong again! Again!
You will never be great, Johnny.
I wasn't a huge fan of the first Sing. I mean, I thought it was fine, but to me it was basically Zootopia's Got Talent. I mean, the story was cute and the animals were cute and the characters were cute. And Garth Jennings, I think, is an interesting director, especially going back to Hitchhiker's Guide or something like that. There's nothing in this new trailer for Sing 2 that really makes me interested in seeing the movie. I mean, I don't get much of a sense of story. I mean, you get some emotional beats here and there. And that's, I guess, part of my problem with this is it looks like it's just going to be a Eurovision version of Sing rather than having it take place in their, you know, Zootopia-type animal towns. I don't know. I mean, it was a huge hit back a couple years ago with the first one, which I thought was passable but not great. The next one I want to talk about is 8-Bit Christmas. Now, this one I'm really looking forward to. HBO Max will be streaming this on November 24th.
Every kid has that one gift they want more than anything for Christmas. This is the story of mine. Nintendo. I needed a Christmas miracle.
The year was the late 80s. I was 11 years old.
Did you wear a helmet?
Yeah, we always wore helmets in the 80s.
Me and my friends would do anything just to play one.
I needed to get my own.
This is our Vietnam.
I don't think that means what you think it means.
This thing looks hilarious. A lot of people have already compared it to A Christmas Story, and it does look like it's going to be one of those modern versions of A Christmas Story, flashing back to the 1980s. What I find so funny is you've got Neil Patrick Harris playing the guy who's telling the story about what it was like to want a Nintendo back in the 80s. And they have a kid playing him, and I'm like, come on. I get it if you have an actor who you mostly recognize as an adult, but we literally have film of Neil Patrick Harris in lead roles in his teens. I mean, he did Doogie Howser, M.D., and the kid who plays him looks nothing like him. I mean, they could have gotten a little bit closer to the mark, but I mean, it looks very funny, and I'm excited to see this, partly because I grew up in the 80s, so I understand the fervor and the excitement of wanting to get a Nintendo, because my family, we didn't have enough disposable income to have anything really cool. I mean, back then, Atari was like top of the line, you know, in the beginning of the 80s, but even we didn't have it. We had Pong, and then we got Pong years after people. By the time you're in the mid-80s, Pong was rudimentary, but we got it at one point. So I've never been up on the video games at home just because my family never had the disposable income necessarily for that, and my parents didn't want to buy this stuff. So I had to go to the arcades. But this thing looks really, really fun. It looks like it's irreverent. It looks like it's silly. It looks like it's made for people who grew up in the 80s or want to remember them. And it looks like it's sort of idealizing the 80s the way That 70s Show did. Because this is also told as a story. He's telling somebody much, much younger than him. And obviously he's embellishing and changing things. So this looks like it's going to be a great little bit. I'm really looking forward to this one. So I'll be talking about that in a couple weeks. And that's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Clifford the Big Red Dog and Passing.
Who let the dogs out?
Who let the dogs out?
Who let the dogs out?
Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews and talk about one that's actually already out. It came out on Wednesday, and this is Clifford the Big Red Dog. A lonely girl in New York City adopts a special red dog that grows to the size of a house, and she enlists the help of the neighborhood to save him from a science lab that wants to do experiments on him.
Look at you, Uncle Casey. So cute.
And so red.
How big is he gonna get?
That depends, doesn't it?
On what?
On how much you love him.
I wish we were big and strong, and the world couldn't hurt us. Bring a friend, join the crowd. Shouldn't we try to hide him or something?
It's New York. No one will even notice.
He's just a big...
Well, you don't see that every day.
Maybe it's time to feed him.
I have a great affinity for the Clifford the Big Red Dog books because I, in high school, was a page at my local library. And we had a page who basically put books away in the juvenile department and page that put books away in the adult section. One of the things we do, because we were teenagers and high school kids, is we never wanted to actually do any work. So we'd sit down there and take forever to sort a cart. We'd pace the work. That's what people do, especially kids. And so we'd end up sitting down there in the workroom, and nobody ever came down there because it was in the basement. It was dingy. It was dark. And so we'd sit there and we'd read books. And I read some of the, I read a Sweet Valley High book once and stuff like that. I read some of the strangest books in my time, just kind of flipping through whatever was on the cart. And at that time, I read a whole bunch of different things, you know, like The Herald and the Purple Crayon and Sylvester and the Magical Pebble and all these different things that were from like the 70s and beyond because, you know, it was in the 80s I was doing this. And they had a ton. I mean, they must have had 50 of these Clifford the Big Red Dog books. And so I probably read all of them, at least up until the mid-80s. And every single one was about Emily Elizabeth, who was a cute little blonde girl who lived in the suburb. And she had this nice little, it was a very suburban house that she was in. And she had a dog that was the size of a trailer. And they never addressed its poop. Although there's a couple poop jokes in this movie. Yes, don't worry, kids. They do address Clifford's poop in this movie just a little bit. But I remember reading the books were always about her. Oh, this is my dog. This is how I feed him. This is how I take him on a walk. And then they get into some situation where Clifford, you know, gets into trouble because he's a big, goofy, lovable dog. Or people are reacting strangely to him because, you know, he's the size of a brontosaurus. So it's very different from the book than it is to the movie. I've never watched the TV series on PBS. My kids never were into that. But you do have to let that change because, you know, it's Hollywood. They're making a bigger movie, and so they have to make it bigger. But they got to give a story behind them, whereas you don't need that in a picture book. Picture books are very rudimentary. So you can't get upset that it's not too much like the original books because, you know, there's 125 words in one of those books. And so they have to make a bigger story. And that's where they give this character of Emily Elizabeth, who's being taken care of by her uncle, who's trying to be a good role model, but he's kind of, his life's a hot mess. And then they're in New York. I mean, I guess New Yorkers have seen everything, but you know, they're just like, hey, look, a giant dog. Let's take pictures of it and do a TikTok with it. That's kind of the reaction people get. I think there'd be a little more terror to an animal, even as adorable as Clifford is in this movie. I think there'd be a little bit more terror to an animal the size of a brownstone. So it's sort of like when that Tom and Jerry movie came out. It wasn't quite like the old cartoons. The old cartoons from the 50s, Tom and Jerry's existence, their universe, was basically the house they lived in, this little suburban house. And they'd go from living room to TV room to bathroom to kitchen, and that's where all the adventures happened in this run of Tom and Jerry cartoons. Well, and of course, the Tom and Jerry movie, they had to get bigger, and they had to go work at a New York hotel, and then they had to do that for the Tom and Jerry movie to justify the big screen version of it, even though it didn't go to the big screen. Same thing with Clifford the Big Red Dog. They make a feature-length film. Tony Hale plays the bad guy. He's Buster from Arrested Development. And it's weird because his corporation is ostensibly there to feed the world. It's trying to find a way to enhance food growth so everybody can be fed and defeat world hunger. But somehow he's the bad guy. And there's weird mixed messaging going on if you dig a deep enough into the story of this. But it's a neat little movie. It's cute. I mean, I got to say, it's not anything that adults are going to love. I mean, yes, it's reductive. Yes, they have fart jokes. Yes, there's a scene where Clifford pees on a tree and all that kind of stuff that you'd expect from a big screen movie like this. But it's cute and it's for kids. And that's kind of why I give it a pass. I watch it. There's some stuff with the characters. I think the characters are actually kind of clever and funny. So yeah, I'm gonna say it kind of rocks because it does exactly what it needs to do. It's in theaters right now, and it's on Paramount Plus, but you got to have an account for that one.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Passing. An African-American woman in the 1920s runs into an old college friend who now lives her life passing as a white woman.
Lots of people pass all the time.
It's easy for a Negro to pass for white. I'm not sure it'd be so simple for a white person to pass for color.
So you haven't ever thought to?
What?
You ever thought of passing?
No, why should I? Now I have everything I've ever wanted.
This is my husband, John Bellew.
Does he know?
But you dislike Negroes, Mr. Bellew?
No, not at all. I hate them.
Have you ever thought of what you'd do if John found out?
This is available on Netflix. It also, like Clifford the Big Red Dog, dropped midweek. I think it was on Wednesday was when it came out. And this is a piece directed by Rebecca Hall. Passing being the term of black people who happen to have fair skin and maybe their hair, they've straightened their hair or they've dyed it or something, but they don't have distinct African-American features. They wouldn't, especially back in the, 100 years ago, could pass as white and then sort of live in that higher echelon of society. And Ruth Negga plays the woman who is passing for white, and you hear in the trailer, her husband hates black people. Something's going to happen at some point there. That's like Chekhov hanging the gun on the wall in the first act of a play. But then Tessa Thompson plays her friend who lives in Harlem, and her husband, and she points out he can't pass. He doesn't have the look to do it, and her kids are very dark. So, she just lives, and she already lives a life of privilege in Harlem. Her husband's a doctor, and she has a servant herself, so they're not living in squalor, and it's in the middle of the Harlem Renaissance, so it's not slums or anything. They live in a very nice area, and a lot of the white people back then would come down so they could see how the other half lives. It does two things. It shows what it's like to slip between both worlds and be in a life of privilege in one and a life of discrimination in another. But at the same time, it shows how you have to hide yourself and hide your identity. And there's a little bit of nuance there. It's in black and white. So that makes it work at times, but it is a little bit heavy-handed, and that's okay. Rebecca Hall, you might have recognized her. She was in Iron Man 3. She played the woman who was in charge of the girl in the Godzilla movie this year, who was friends with King Kong. Rebecca Hall herself is generally recognized. She's British, but she's generally recognized as a white actress, although she does have black heritage too. I think her mother has African-American heritage or somewhere in her background. So she herself kind of lives in that passing lifestyle. It does at times feel like it does have a little bit of white guilt heaped on it, but I think it's worth checking out. I think it's going to get lost in award season, but I think it's worth seeing at least for the conversation. It's available on Netflix right now, so I'm going to have to say that Passing kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Belfast and Olaf Presents. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the next film, and it's the only exclusive in the theaters this week. And that is Belfast. Kenneth Branagh directs a semi-autobiographical tale of the violent unrest in Belfast, Northern Ireland at the end of the 60s and into the 70s, told from the point of view of a 9-year-old child.
Mama says if we went across the water, they wouldn't understand the way we talk.
If they can't understand you, then they're not listening. You know who you are, don't you? You're Buddy from Belfast, where everybody knows you.
To cleanse the community a wee bit.
You wouldn't want to be the old man out in the street.
Touch my family and I'll kill you.
Are we gonna have to
have to leave Belfast.
This is going to be one of your major award contenders. It's getting a big push by Focus Features, and with good reason. This is an absolutely beautiful film. It's like I said, semi-autobiographical because Kenneth Branagh was originally from Belfast, and I mean, most people think of him as British, but he was Irish. He grew up in Belfast, and his family faced this violence on the street and riots and explosions and people breaking things and attacking each other. And he was 9 when this was going on. So it's a very daunting thing, literally walking right outside of his flat and suddenly there's all these violence happening where he's just this kid from Belfast who just he's in a neighborhood. And that's what makes the story work, because there's a lot to deconstruct in this, but I'll just talk about it from the framing device. The framing device is for this little kid, his name Buddy, and is played by this brilliant little actor, Jude Hill, and he's 9. He's a sweet little kid, and he embodies that wonderment of the child. And it's told from his point of view in the sense that he's just playing in the street one day with his friends. You know, they're playing knights and they had a sword, and then suddenly this thing happens in the background and there's this violent, real violence happening. Takes him by surprise. He gets kind of swept up with his family at home. And he doesn't know what's going on. He doesn't understand the nuance of politics. He really doesn't even understand what it means to be Protestant or Catholic at this point, even though they have him going to church and getting screamed at by the pastor. And so it's him trying to put this in a framework that he understands. So the movie's not about the unrest in Belfast. It doesn't deal with the politics behind it. It's more the kid and how the kid absorbs it and how the kid just lives a normal life. And a lot of the more, I'm not going to say adult scenes because they're not adult. They're grown-up scenes with grown-ups talk. It's him kind of listening in, or he's in the kitchen and he can hear out the window his father and his grandfather talking. And he only is picking up what a 9-year-old's going to pick up. And that's kind of the brilliance of this movie, because it doesn't hit you over the head with any sort of messaging when it comes to what was really going on then. Because, you know, it's very, all this stuff is oftentimes very, very difficult. And it reminds me a little bit of the TV series Derry Girls, which you can get on Netflix. And this is both Northern Ireland and deals with unrest there. The Derry Girls takes place in the 90s. This takes place, 1969. It starts, spills into 1970. But the Derry Girls show is about these teenagers who live in Derry, where there was a big unrest back in the 90s. And they just live, that's just where they live. And that's in the backdrop. But they're still just teenagers going through their life. And that's what makes that show interesting, because you have this massive historical thing happening, but they just are still going to parties and going to school and just, they're boy crazy and all that kind of stuff. And that's sort of the point, because that's what Branagh experienced as a kid. And so there's all these giant holes of explanation and follow through that are not addressed. And that's okay, because that's not the point of the movie. The point of the movie is this is a safe space for the kid. And even with the violence going on, it's his safe space, because that's where his home's at. Because even though windows got broken and that sort of thing, he could still go to bed and stay. And his family was there. And he had his grandfather, played by Kieran Hines, who's fabulous in the movie. And his grandmother, played by Judi Dench. And you've got his parents, played by Jamie Dornan and Katrina Balfe. And they all do a great job. They all are extremely well cast in these roles, and they all give very subtle performances. And the focus is how this affects community and how this sort of thing affects children and what they carry on with what they see and how they digest it and how they interpret it. And even if they learn the real grown-up reasons behind it as they get older. I mean, obviously, I'm not at all suggesting that Kenneth Branagh doesn't understand what went on in Belfast in 1969, but I guarantee you when he was 9, he didn't. And this can be compared to anything, any sort of place that's unrest, whether refugees from Afghanistan, it could be people coming up from Mexico or fleeing dangers from other countries. And, it could be what's going on in, with Belarus and Poland and all this kind of stuff that's going on in Eastern Europe. It doesn't matter where you are. You have just people living their lives, and you still have community and family and humor and love and all that kind of stuff that makes a community and makes a family exist. And even if it's in a horrible circumstance, you still have your ups and downs and your laughter and your tears. And that's really the essence of Belfast. That's it's a fantastic movie. And I absolutely love it. I had a wonderful chance to go see it at the Los Angeles premiere. It was brilliant and just a powerful, powerful film. Absolutely worth checking out. I'm going to say it totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next movie I want to talk about is not really a movie. It's a TV section, I'm going to say. And that is Olaf Presents. That is on the Disney Plus service. Olaf, the snowman from Frozen, retells a handful of classic Disney animated films with their own unique spin to them.
For almost 100 years, Walt Disney Animation Studios has given us beloved classics and timeless moments we'll never forget. Now, join an old friend as he retells these stories in a way only he can.
Three wishes. The ocean chose me. Let down your hair.
Wow, wow. As I mentioned earlier, I had a chance to go to Los Angeles and see the LA premiere of this, where they had Brana and the cast and everybody, and you got to hear them talk about it. And I might be popping in some excerpts from some audio in the next couple weeks, because this is one of my favorite movies of the year. But as I was preparing for the trip to go to LA, I didn't get a chance to watch my Olaf Presents screeners. So I contacted Disney and I'm like, can you extend them? I could only have tonight to watch them and I have enough time. And I looked at them. They're 2 minutes each and there's six of them. So it literally took me about 10 minutes to watch the Olaf thing. It's not a big time commitment to watch these Olaf Presents movies. They're basically just the individual stories, but he retells them. It's him dressing up and using the other characters from Frozen and condensing the story. Like I said, you know, they tell like the Little Mermaid in, I don't know, 90 seconds or something like that. They're very cute, but it seems to be a little bit gutsy for Disney to be presenting these as brand new content this week. And I think that's part of because this week they had the Disney Plus Day where they're putting out stuff about, you know, upcoming stuff. They're promoting their new things. And so that's one of the releases. They've also got the new Home Alone movie that came out during the Disney Plus Day. I'll be talking about that next week. So they're using it as a catch. Now, this is the kind of thing like kids are going to watch. This is for little kids. I mean, if you're a big Olaf fan, certainly it's worth watching the Olaf Presents stories. Honestly, anybody can watch them. It takes like 10 minutes to watch the whole shebang. The stuff I find most cute is him doing the classic versions of the older movies, and it's like they're kind of doing the 80s and on, like they do the Little Mermaid, I think they do Aladdin, and then then they move into the more modern stuff, like they do Tangled and they do Moana, so they have a much more modern look to this. I guess Olaf doesn't like the old school stuff. He wasn't out there watching the Aristocats or Jungle Book or Snow White necessarily. But these are cute. It's the kind of thing you'd see as a special feature on a Blu-ray or DVD, just a little tidbit at the end that you could watch with the kids and with the family. So they're cute. And you know, I'm going to say that they kind of rock. And if they don't, if you think they're terrible, you've only wasted 10 minutes of your time if you've already got Disney Plus. So, hey, you know, it's kind of a win either way. So, yeah, like I said, the Olaf Presents things, they're cute. I'm going to give them a kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Red Notice and the Home Cinema Roundup. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on and finish up the movie reviews with Red Notice. Dwayne Johnson plays an Interpol agent trying to catch a famous thief played by Ryan Reynolds, and they both fall victim to Gal Gadot, who is also searching for the same loot.
Now that you've been tagged with Red Notices, you've become the world's most wanted criminals.
Looking for something specific or just browsing?
You're under arrest.
Oh my God. Read the room.
Help me catch her, and I will help you.
Teamwork. Team. It feels weird in my mouth.
How's it going with your partner in crime?
We're work wives.
We're not work wives.
We're sister wives.
We're not any kind of wives.
This is on Netflix. You can see it. Anybody can watch on Netflix right now, but it had a brief, very, very, very small run in theaters last week. And I think the only reason that it had a theatrical run was in order to probably have a qualifying Academy run for like technicals. Like, it's not going to win any acting awards, let me tell you. That's not a dig against the movie. I think that's just the way it is. I mean, it's directed by Rawson Marshall Thurber. He's best known for doing stuff like Skyscraper. And I think he did Central Intelligence. So he's worked with Dwayne Johnson before. None of this stuff is award-winning material that he's doing, and he knows that, and that's okay. And that's one of the things that I do like about The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, is that he's not out to win an award on this. He's just doing a fun movie, and sometimes fun movies are great. Other ones, like Baywatch, you know, suck. But, you know, this one, it's a lot of action. It's over the top. It's a little bit silly. And even Central Intelligence, when he was paired up with Kevin Hart. And I think they kind of follow that way of making the movie, because you pair up Dwayne Johnson with Ryan Reynolds. And they actually make a pretty good pair. I mean, Ryan Reynolds, his sarcastic, smart aleck nature, it's funny. You gotta admit, it's funny. Now, here's the thing. It's just a stupid heist movie. And I don't think as a heist movie, it's not as good as like Army of Thieves, which was last week, but it's still a fun, over-the-top, silly action movie. There's nothing great about this movie. There's nothing deep about this movie. This movie does not set out to fix any problems or solve anything or win awards. You know, like Belfast, which I talked about in the last segment, that is 100% going for the Oscar. This is not going for any Oscars. Maybe technical Oscars if, you know, sound design or something like that. But this is not a movie that anyone is trying to win awards from. But it's fun. And I like the buddy cop type movie when they're actors that I like. You know, that's why I like the Lethal Weapons. I thought that Danny Glover and Mel Gibson had a great chemistry together. And in this one, I think Ryan Reynolds and Dwayne Johnson have really good chemistry together. Gal Gadot comes in now and then. She swerves in, you know, to kind of be like, hey, look, I'm sexy and I'm here and I'm also in this movie. But she's not along for the ride as intimately as these other two are. And they make a good pair, because they may not be exactly Kevin Hart and The Rock, who are, you know, sizably very different. They are different types of personality. You know, Ryan Reynolds is a little bit more sarcastic and, you know, smart aleck. The Rock is a little more straightforward. I'm a nice guy, but I want to get this done. And it has some good, fun, little goofy action scenes. I mean, it's getting raked over the coals by critics, but you know what? Sometimes critics don't know what the heck they're talking about. Sometimes critics are expecting a lot more from a movie than what they're going to get, and they should know better. This movie is not trying to save lives. It's not trying to change the world. It's just trying to provide you with 2 hours of fun entertainment, even if it's a little predictable and it's a little bit cliche, which it is. It's all of those. Yes, every single complaint you're going to have about this movie is absolutely 100% true. But I enjoyed watching it. I had a fun time. I mean, in this day and age, it's nice to be able to just watch a movie and enjoy it. The other thing that I think is interesting about this movie is it wasn't funded by Netflix from the ground up. Netflix acquired it. And so this could have gone to the theaters, but it's not. And I think this is Netflix galvanizing itself as a company that's going to deliver theatrical quality content to the streaming service. As much as that will rub some people the wrong way, somebody like Denis Villeneuve, who thinks that everything needs to be seen in the theater. And yes, even Martin Scorsese, who's taken advantage of Netflix and made movies under Netflix, he's complained about that loss of the theatrical function. But you know what? Netflix delivers something that's theatrical quality, and it's honestly, in terms of big budget movies, I mean, yeah, Belfast is an award film, but this one's the one that looks most Hollywood, and it's showing up on your TV. And again, you cannot discount streaming. Streaming's not going anywhere. So I'm going to say Red Notice kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. I'm going to do a different version of home cinema this week, and it's not cinema from the television, but it's cinema of the mind. You can do it at home, or you can do it while you're on the road. I've always been a big fan of audiobooks, ever since I was in college, because I'd have to drive back and forth. I went to Bowling Green, and I'd have to drive to Columbus, Ohio, which is like a 2.5-hour drive. Back then, it was called Books on Tape. but I've always enjoyed audiobooks, and you have Audible. I actually have a couple audiobooks out there if you want to search Audible for my name, or you can go to my website. I can direct you to that. Just go to Fat Guys at the Movies. You should be able to find my audiobooks. It's a very intimate way, and especially if you're involved with radio, you like the theater of the mind. It's very personal. I'm talking in your ears. And that is something that happens with audiobooks. It's a great way to experience literature. Like, for example, if you're driving a lot. I recently took a trip. Like I said, I went to go see Belfast. I saw the LA premiere. Of course, I was on a plane. It was one of the greatest things in the world. My son had gotten me these Skull Candy noise-canceling headsets. So you can put it on. It's Bluetooth attached to the phone. And I just listened to audiobooks the whole time. And I listened to audio productions. And you can put those on. I keep the headset on while I'm in the airport so nobody talks to me. But also it drowns out all the other noise if you have the noise canceling thing. And it's a great way to pass the time when you're just stuck in the air crammed, you know, between, you know, somebody with severe body odor and somebody who is a cougher. You know, it's a great way to just kind of close yourself off and enjoy yourself. You put you have your mask on, and then you put your eye mask on. You can go to sleep and you can listen to whatever you want to listen to. And one of the things I want to highlight is one way to get audio content. And that is through this app. I discovered it a couple of years ago. It's called Libby, L-I-B-B-Y, and it's connected to your local library. And you can borrow digitally. You don't even have to go out of the house. You can do this on the toilet and you can borrow these books. And it's not every single book's available, but they've got a really nice selection. And the one that I borrowed that I was really getting into is the Twilight Zone radio dramas. Now, these are multiple volumes of the radio production, the infamous anthology genre series, and they're available to listen to for free on various online apps.
You're traveling through another dimension. A dimension not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are those of imagination. Your next stop, the Twilight Zone.
I'm a big fan of the Twilight Zone. I rewatched all the episodes about 2 years ago. I've recently started to watch the second season of the reboot that Jordan Peele produced. The first season I thought was kind of mediocre, but I'm part of the way through the second season, and this one's a lot better. It's more authentically Twilight Zone type stories, and so I've been really enjoying those. And these Twilight Zone radio dramas, they're classic episodes that have been reimagined as a radio drama. You know, stuff like Will the Real Martian Stand Up? The Martians Are Doing Maple Street. Five Characters in Search of an Exit. Stacy Keach narrates he's the Rod Serling voice for it. But they have famous people playing different characters in this. Now, granted, a lot of these were produced in the 90s and early 2000s, but you can find like all of them on the Libby app. At least I could find them on mine. Now, you have to have a qualifying library card. And then you can access it, and it's a great way to get plugged in and connect. So if you're somebody who has a lot of downtime and can't focus on reading a book, and they don't want to just play on your phone, it's a great option, and it's a great tool. I do it when I drive long distances. We usually vacation in the winter. I don't like taking planes. If I have to, I will, but then I'll have my Libby app with me. So I'm going to say getting these things is a great way to experience stuff when you can't otherwise experience it. As long as you've already caught up on all your Fat Guys at the Movies shows and you've listened to me completely as much as you need to on the radio, yes, then go and get to your Libby app and download it. So I'm going to say that these Twilight Zone radio dramas totally rock, and just the idea of a Libby app and online audiobooks also is a fantastic thing as well. So they all totally rock.
It rocks.
Excellent!
Also available this week, we have the films Reminiscent, Old Henry, and Respect, which are new films on DVD and Blu-ray. They also have The Ten Commandments, Steelbook, The Outsiders in 4K, The Addams Family live-action films in 4K, The Hills Have Eyes in 4K, and Top Gun Special Collections Edition. Don't worry, there'll be another one before the sequel eventually comes out, I'm sure. And then Snowpiercer Season 2 and DC's Legends of Tomorrow, the sixth season. And that's it. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about King Richard and Ghostbusters Afterlife. Until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.